This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett. With Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Now it's time for the expert interview. And as you know, guys, we've been doing this for long enough now. I get the privilege to sit down with people whom I regard as being legitimate experts. Now, what do I mean by legitimate experts? It's quite simple. I mean track record. They haven't necessarily got the great book out that everyone looked at and never read. They haven't necessarily got some system that you can buy. But what they do have is an irrefutable third-party bank of social proof that what they know or what they can do has worked in accounting practices all over the place. So this week, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Dermot Hamlin, who is the founder of Langdon Hamlin. Dermot, welcome.
Hi, Martin. Very privileged to be here.
The feeling is mutual. we're going to start with definition of terms. You know, what is a Langdon Hamlin? What does it do? And why should the practitioner audience listening to this care?
Yes, a great question. So, Martin, I've actually been working with the profession since May the 1st, 1996. And that was the day that I joined a small software house called Iris Software. So I was number 44 on the payroll, 3 million revenues. And I had a fantastic 10 years there, which, you know, took me from being a boy to a man in kind of selling terms. Ended up as the corporate sales director, went through 2, if not 3 VC flips. And had a thoroughly entertaining and educational time at Iris. When I left, it was 35 million revenue, give or take, and about 250 people. So yeah, rapid rise. If we weren't doing kind of 20% year on year, then people wanted to know. And obviously, once the money men get involved, that's a very different conversation to when it's a privately owned business, which it was when I joined. And then since then, I've worked with a couple of other software houses at kind of director level. But for the last 10 years, I've been working for myself, self-employed. So I think it was early November 2011, even with my limited maths, I can work that out. That was 10 years ago. And I help both vendors and I help practitioners. So I've got the attention span of a kind of goldfish. So I like to sit on both sides of the table. So I help practitioners with the move, from being a legacy firm to a firm which is taking advantage of all of the opportunities which present themselves in the current environment. And then I also help vendors with their go-to-market strategies. Quite often that's been people who are launching into the UK. So I spent best part of 2 years with your good friend of mine, Colin Dunn and Rob Nixon of Panalytics, launching them back 2015 to 2017. And then, helping some of the vendors, be that in the app environment or other audit tools, launch into the UK.
Excellent. So there's a huge amount to unpack there. So I want to go to one particular thing. I mean, go-to-market strategy for vendors, I think we understand that at face value. But you mentioned helping legacy firms take advantage of what's coming next. What do we mean by a legacy firm?
Yes, well, I suppose one way you could argue that that's quite a harsh description, but I think it's people who have realised that they've got to move from where they were to take advantage of, and I don't want to just, restrict this to a talk about tech, despite the fact that my background is, very tech-driven. So what I mean is, what is a modern firm? What does a modern firm look like? Or indeed, what is a digital firm? Everyone uses this phrase, we're a digital firm of accountants, but nobody really has defined that. And once you start asking some, questions around that, one person who's got a zero badge, on the front door will have, 100% of their clients on zero and, dexed and utilizing some of the apps that are available. And others will have kind of, barely unpacked the software from the metaphorical software box. But both can, call themselves a digital firm. So I think it's working with firms to actually make sure that they've got some people strategies in place, that they've got a vision of where they as a firm are going. And I think that should be very firmly driven by what the owners want to get out of the business. It's your kind of toy, so you're entitled to play with it how you want. And obviously that's got to be very different from a sole practitioner through to, I'm working with a firm who've got kind of just around about 100 people, working for them. So taking advantage of what's available in all areas, training, but really bringing that back to delivering a really client-centric service, you know, putting your client at the heart of what you do, making sure that whatever decisions that you take are there with the client front of mind. And then, you know, that will drive what particular area, you know, you go in. And as we were kind of chatting, just before we came, came on air, the thing that interests me about accountancy is just the sheer breadth and kind of the firms that there are. So, you know, whenever you start a business, doesn't matter what sector you're in, you've got to, you know, scramble and hustle for those first few years to get clients on board and then get to a level of income that you're happy with. And then you can, shall we say, become a bit more strategic and work on whatever you want to work on. So with some people, they might want to, you know, have a good income stream, but take the excess money to build themselves a property portfolio, which, you know, several accountants do. And that's great. I think that's really interesting. Or others might, you know, get in really deep with some firms that, you know, come knocking on the door. And of course, you know, being based in the Northeast, there are plenty of stories, obviously all not true, about, you know, a number of accountants who turned away Mr. Goldbloom, who was the founder of Sage. You know, he went to get his first year's accounts done because he was so skint that he didn't have any money to pay anybody to do it. He was just offering, you know, Sage shares. And of course, you know, the sting in the tail there, that if those people had accepted those shares, they probably could have retired a lot earlier than they had in their own plans. Or, you know, you can focus in certain areas, you know, R&D, or you can dig deep into tax. So it's just the sheer breadth of opportunity that exists. And the fact that, you know, we might have 35,000, give or take, or our good chum, Steve Cox, would probably say there's a lot more than that, accountancy firms in the UK. But, you know, they're all very different.
Yeah, and for our international listeners, Dermot just used the term skint there, meaning broke, meaning no money, just in case that didn't translate too well for everyone within the sound of our voices. So, Dermot, 2 points I want to bring out of what you just said there. The first one, you mentioned, you know, that for practice owners, it's their toy and they have the right to play with it as they see fit. So they need to decide what they want out of it. And yet you and I both know that if we, and it's such a broad church, I agree, the term accountants, but if we go to the provincial firm and go to the leadership of the provincial firm and ask them point blank, what do you want out of the practice and by when, they can't answer that. So why? What's your diagnosis? What's your analysis on why something as simple as deciding what I want out of the practice and by when isn't a standard behavior within an accounting firm?
Yeah, good question. So I think it comes back to probably that cliche, and I know you asked me to keep away from cliches, but it's the fact that accountants are great at helping other businesses have their things in order, paperwork, you know, their organisation in order to be compliant, to keep people out of jail and enable them to sleep at night. But they're never very good at working, you know, on their own businesses. And I think if they took and, you know, that will come back to, you know, history, the way that they were trained when they joined a firm, trained by their institutes. It's all been, you know, in one certain direction. I do think there's a kind of a change with some of the younger people who are now beginning to, you know, think about going out on their own or hitting those senior management positions or leadership positions in the firms. But yeah, there's still the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second thing I wanted to unpack is you were telling us the story of Sage there. And I was monitoring a Facebook conversation recently in an accountants group where they were asking, you know, should we make the client fit our mold and one size fits all and that one size is zero? Or should we be multi-platform in order to serve the client's needs? Because the indoctrination that they've been given is that zero is the panacea for all ills. And whatever the question is, the answer is zero. And they've gone along with that rather than really think it through for themselves. And it's starting to dawn on them in this conversation in Facebook that perhaps isn't the right fit for the client and they might have to be multi-platform in order to grow their firms with the types of clients that they would want to. Where do you sit on the fence with that? Is it good for an accounting firm to be myopic and say, this is the platform we support and you have to fit into this box for us to act for you? Or do you prefer a far more generalist approach to say, no, the client is the center of everything we do, therefore whatever you need, we will do our best to serve. Which side of the fence do you sit on?
Well, I think it depends upon the the size of the firm. For a smaller firm, let's say one, two partners with just up to 10 people, then there are some quite big efficiency benefits to them to just choose one platform, whatever that platform happens to be. And that comes around the fact that there's, shall we say, one set of updates to percolate throughout the team, to be shared over a lunch and learn or training sessions, however the firm does that. There's only one, vendor conference to go to, be that, QBC Connect or Xerocon or Iris World or SageCon, whatever it happens to be. There's also, I think, the often unkind of mentioned benefit that if you are stuck, you can't remember how to do something in whatever software product you are using, you can just turn to the person next to you, tap them on the shoulder and say, do you know what, I've not split these, invoice payments up for a couple of times. How the hell do I, split this invoice up? How do I do it? And they'll be able to tell you rather than go back with a, sorry, Flossie, I use, a different software product, so I can't help you. And I think that's quite a big benefit. So I would say for the smaller firm, that would be the way to do it. I think within slightly larger firms, then you should create teams, so you'll have a team that will focus on, vendor A, vendor B, vendor C, and see that through. But for the reasons that I've just said, if you want to share. And yes, the tools that we've talked about, and they are tools, much as I love software, I've worked in software for, most of the last 25 years, then they are just software tools. So I must admit, some of the passion and tribalism that we see in the current environment does amuse me.
Yeah, the blue or the green. Yeah. So if we're talking about smaller firms, and you mentioned there that for correlation purposes, for efficiency purposes, when they are one or two partners, when they've got maybe up to 10 staff, and it's good for them to have one system, and therefore it keeps the whole thing coherent. That I understand completely, and that argument I completely understand.
Yeah.
Do you think that risks, or does that prohibit growth as they try and break out of being one to two partner, 10 staff, and they try and take a step up the ladder in the type of prospects they attract, and a prospect comes to them and says, look, we've been using QuickBooks for ages, that's a non-negotiable for us, and they say, sorry, can't help you on that basis. Does that myopic sort of tunnel vision work very well for internal operations, but not work very well for practice growth?
Well, it's a fair point. And but I'd love to know from practitioners how many people have knocked on the door and how many potential clients have knocked on the door and said, I'm a QuickBooks house and you have to use QuickBooks, otherwise I'm not going to sign up now. So in a way, I think once you've actually said to that particular client, look, we use software ABC, which just doesn't happen to be QuickBooks, and you would be an exception rather than the rule. So you're much better off going to find, a QuickBooks provider. Then it's probably much easier to actually do. And I think with everything in life, that the more you focus down on stuff, then you become better known in that software ABC world. And therefore, it's by being well known in software ABC world that you attract far more people than you would actually turn away by trying to be all things to all men.
Right. So it's a game of averages, basically. Yeah, it's playing a game of averages. Excellent. So moving on now. No, to a different topic. We're recording this interview. Generally, we record interviews 3 or 4 weeks ahead of when they go out. And the big news at the time of our recording is Sage's acquisition of GoProposal. Now, again, for our international listeners, GoProposal is a piece of pricing software that has come to prominence over the last 4 years or so and has garnered a very adherent community towards it, and they have bought in very much not just to the software and the usage of the software to improve their pricing, but to the general messaging and evangelism of GoProposal's leadership. This has led to a somewhat surprise announcement in that they have gone with Sage, because whereas no one is surprised that Go Proposal has sold. It's perhaps who they've sold to that has been the surprise and indeed the price they've got. So in any order you like, though, you know, you look at things from a tech perspective and how it affects the practitioner when these things happen. What is Sage's motivation behind doing this? You know, is there any upside to any practitioner? Is it purely to fill the pension fund of the founders of Go Proposal? What is behind this purchase? What is behind this acquisition? And how do practitioners benefit as a result of Sage now owning it?
Yeah. So first of all, you know, congratulations to the leadership of Go Proposal. It is a good story. You know, from zero to 1,200 firms in about 5 years is good going. So congratulations to them. I think for, you know, a lot of people, and we've seen, you know, the Xero tribe have been very vocal in their criticism of Sage and what they are not. And, you know, the term dinosaur turns up very frequently, you know, referring back to my mention of tribalism in a previous comment. I think it's fair to say that, you know, Sage have been working away very hard, very diligently, have made some really big strides in the last 2 to 3 years, predominantly since, very enthusiastic gentleman called Chris Downing has been there. And, you know, Chris has done a great job in terms of shaping, you know, their products. So they do actually, you know, you could argue, quite clearly lead the way in terms of a suite of cloud-based products. From Sage Business Accounting through to their, you know, accounts production, corporation tax, personal tax. So they have led the marketplace there. The one massive gap that they've had is a cloud-based practice management / CRM tool. And I think in all of the announcements that came out yesterday, what was mentioned in a video I saw that Go Proposal are very close to launching a CRM tool under their own guys, as was. So obviously Sage have now bought that. And so that would be quite a clever strategic move by Sage to fill a big kind of hole in their product portfolio with that particular acquisition. And then, yes, you know, Go Proposal is obviously, you know, closely associated with James Ashford. And it will then be down to, you know, James as VP within the new business to drive that forward. So I think that offers, obviously, Sage have a big client bank. So it gives, you know, Sage a great opportunity to try and not only sell that into the existing Go Proposal community, you know, who are very committed to GP, but then they've also got a great opportunity to sell that into, you know, the rest of the Sage family who won't have, who, you know, obviously not using that at this moment in time. So that's quite a clever strategic move. The benefit to the practitioner, one, there's choice, and, you know, choice drives innovation. I do think, you know, nobody can accuse the UK accounting market space of being short of choice. You know, in the way, if you go to Australia, then, you know, very different situation in certain product sectors.
Yeah.
Practice management being an obvious one in Australia, where there's very limited choice, certainly once you, you know, go out of the top end. So in terms of the benefit to the practitioner's choice, I do think it's actually a massive PR coup for Sage in terms of this acquisition, kind of getting, shall we say, one of the most revered apps, you know, which they've put into their own product suite. So I think it will actually make a lot of people, rather than just go, oh, Sage, they lost the plot. Well, you know, if you look at, actually took some time and investigated what they're doing, what their products, you know, how they sit, rather than just repeating, you know, the oft-versed cliches which we see in social media, then you'll see that they actually have a really strong suite to start with, and it now drives them forward. So yeah, good move by Sage. Inevitably, when, you know, big corporate buys small business, as John Stockdyke said on Accounting Web yesterday, there's all the typical honeymoon noises when such an acquisition takes place. We'll just have to see how these roll out, and having been involved in a few of them, there is generally one way that they do end. So we'll see.
So this one's a to be continued. So as we wrap up now, there's two questions I have remaining for you, one business and one personal. You know, as you've highlighted in your sort of journey towards where you are today, yep. you're not a newcomer to the accounting profession by any stretch of the imagination. And the brand Langdon Hamblin has also been around for a long time, but perhaps never quite so visible as it is now. So as we stand today at the time of recording, what is Langdon Hamblin now bringing to accounting practitioners that hasn't been available elsewhere and hasn't been available up until now? Where do you fit in the market?
So what I do, I work with practitioners who are basically overwhelmed with choice in how to move forward. So, they will have gone out, they'll have signed up for, product X, product Y. They've got all excited. They'll have done a launch day, internally. They'll have brought the pizzas and the beers in at the end of the day to really get people motivated. And then 18 months on, it's all kind of fizzled out and not really gone forward. And, the hard thing about moving forward, because it involves change. And, I know change, in this office, you can see some of those pictures behind me. Some of them took 6 months, before I managed to get them on the wall. It was that difficult to move them on one side of the office to the other. So, and obviously, that flippant statement, if you move that forward into a business when you're trying to, drive through some big change, it is challenging. So I think, there are people who know that they want to. Well, they know that they should. More importantly, they want to move forward. But sometimes it's just working out that, how do I do it? And I come in and, like you say, with a few years around the block, obviously, when I started, I had a broad mind and narrow waist. And now those two things have reversed. And so I can bring in some enthusiasm, some direction, some accountability. And I think I've always been pretty good at getting things done, if I use a polite term. So,
is it fair to say that you are the hand holder for practices who now know they have to progress onto the next stage of their development?
Yeah, that's a nice way to do it. Hand holder, even a shoulder to cry on sometimes. Sometimes there's also that little bit of tough love about making sure that, things do happen, because, I would never dispute that, accountants are busy. Right. Yeah, there's always things to do. I don't think in, the 25 years I've been dealing with them, that there's been a situation where, accountants are really, really looking for things to do. Again, but you need to work back. Is that the right thing to do? Am I doing it in the right order? Are we organised well enough? Are we just picking jobs up, putting them down? Are we responding to emails and phone calls as soon as they come in? So there's a huge number of ways that, we can become more efficient. Handholder is not a bad description.
Excellent. So is it summing up now? Let's just take a quick diversion to Dermot the individual. When you're not immersed in the wide, wild world of accountancy, what do you enjoy? What do you get involved in? Where do your passions lay? Who is Dermot away from the accounting world?
Yeah, nice question. So as you can probably see, if you can make out some of the pictures behind me, they're all of a sporting nature. Most of them referring back to England's significant victory back in 1966, which I just managed to arrive for, I'm pleased to say. So I love sport, but I live about 50 yards now from a sports club, old traditional sports club in the UK. So that means rugby union, cricket, bowls and squash. So I've been playing squash for a long time. Can't say I've ever been particularly good at it, but I do hold the quite unique title that I've actually had a squash ball in both eyes on separate occasions, which is not something I'd recommend to anybody else. It is pretty painful. And also I'm kind of at that stage in my sporting career where I'm involved in the administration. So I've raised a fair bit of money across the way. So I'm pleased to say that I've raised 150 grand for the sports club, which we've put to use with the complete refit of AstroTurf floodlights, which just got finished off yesterday. Last of the floodlights went in, so that's great. That will be a massive cash injection for the club. 30 grand on a tractor, which our beloved accountant actually, we got a 20 grand grant and our accountant turned that into a 30 grand tractor. So yes, if there are any accountants who do have any spare time, then your local sport clubs need you more now than ever before. So and I know many of them do get involved in local sports clubs. So yeah, that keeps me nice and busy.
It's a heck of an achievement as well. In 66, did the East German linesman have an agenda in awarding the third goal as having crossed the line for against the West German team?
Yes, I think he said in 50 years' time, Martin and Dermot will be having a conversation and will still be grating on every Scotsman that's mentioned the match ever since.
So just to wrap up then, absolutely finally. Now, this is a podcast for largely accounting practitioners. And as I said at the start, it's in 138 countries now, with the predominant territories being the expected ones, UK, US and Australia. So presumably firms in any of those territories are firms that you can help in one way or another. So those listening to this who have made a decision to start having a conversation and want to reach out to you, where do they start? Where do they go to?
Yeah. So I'm reasonably active on LinkedIn, so that would be the best place to start. Obviously any of the English speaking countries that you mentioned are pretty good, but you know, we're very lucky in England is that as English is the language of business. So, I was lucky enough to spend 7 months working in Varna, Bulgaria. So if there are any Bulgarians, listening into the pod and want a bit of help, then my 20 words of Bulgarian can still be, put to good use.
Excellent. Excellent. So LinkedIn, guys, to reach out to Dermot and to take that first step forward with a handholder to get to the next stage of the practice's development. Dermot, on that note, I want to thank you very much indeed for your time to be with us on Expert Interview today. And I look forward to hearing more about Langland Hammond's developments throughout the rest of this year and 2022.
This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.